Welcome, everyone. Episode 2 of the Oddcast, Matt Jones and Greg Doyle. It is Monday afternoon around 4:30 or so, and we're going to tape. We're taping this. I don't know. It'll probably go up Monday night, Tuesday morning. Gregory is at his home studio. Greg, how are you?
I'm good, but I'm not going to remember numbers for long, but I can remember three, and this is number three because...
The first one is not on our little iTunes feed, so that's why I'm calling it the second one. That's going to be like our episode zero, the one with Jay Billis.
I was about to say, the fact that Billis is on there means it exists. You can't take it away from me. It's like Reggie Bush and Heisman. I saw him win that thing.
You saw him win it.
And I heard Jay Billis talk to me, and I taped it and actually go to sleep at night sometimes listening to it. So I know I had Billis on here.
All right. Well, now I heard through one of my sources that you had a very awkward radio appearance today. Am I correct?
Oh, it was brutal. Brutal is on. Yeah, your sources are killing me. But it was on Sirius Satellite. It was Jack Arute. If you remember Jack Arute?
Jack Arute, he used to do NASCARs. He does IndyCar, right? He does IndyCar stuff.
Yeah, you know, anything with wheels, I drive them, but I don't watch them, so I don't know. But okay. It was Jack Arute and Mike Leese, former Texas Tech coach. It started awkwardly because I wrote something about Rich Rodriguez today, just said that there was an interview he did, and he came out and said, yeah, leaving West Virginia was a mistake. And I wrote, the whole thing was, I really like a guy that could admit he made a mistake. Well, unfortunately, the entire interview starts on the premise of, hey, you talked to Rich Rodriguez. What was it like talking to him? Here we are, live radio, serious. Listen, guys, I didn't talk to him. And if you'd read my story, you'd have seen that I didn't claim to talk to him. Someone else talked to him. But that's not even the awkward part. Here comes the awkward part.
We're yes.
talking about some coaches making a fit here, making a not a fit there. And I brought up, well, case in point was what happened in Oklahoma several years ago. That was a wishbone program forever. I was a big Sooner fan. They brought in a different coach, got rid of the wishbone, and I'm screaming that knucklehead for putting in a passing offense. Then Mike Leach goes, well, considering I was the guy that put that offense in, he was the offensive coordinator at the time. Whoops.
Oh, very nice. So were you able to sort of charm your way out of it, or did you just completely, do what you do and he hates you and now you are going to curse at each other?
Technically what I did was lie. I told him I wasn't talking about you. I was talking about Gary Gibbs. And I think I may have been talking
who
about
is Gary Gibbs? Gibbs? Nobody knows who Gary Gibbs is.
Gary Gibbs was the head coach at OU after Switzer. And really, Gibbs is the guy I was talking about.
Okay.
But it's possible that they didn't start passing until Leach got there. I always thought Gibbs started passing. So it's possible I was ripping Leach, didn't even know I was ripping Leach, and he's the guy co-hosting the show. Awkward.
Awkward is right. All right, now let's, speaking of awkward, it's going to be awkward at Ohio State. It's got to be for Jim Tressel at this point, because you know how this is, Greg. You tell a little white lie and you get caught, and so then you tell another white lie to try to get out of it, and soon, basically, you've become a liar. This Jim Tressel story, for people who haven't really followed it, at what point do we just say, listen, just because he wears a sweater vest and the glasses and it like he tries to look like a dork, deep down inside, maybe he really is just a liar?
Well, I think the whole Maurice Clarett episode showed that he's not the sweet little dentist elf from Rudolph Ritter's Reindeer. That's what he looks like. He looks like that little dentist elf from the island.
That's actually a good call. He does kind of look like that.
Looks just like that little dentist elf. So you're giving him way too much credit to describe what he did as little white lies. Those were scarlet red lies. The scarlet letter L should be printed on his forehead. Those were big bad lies. And he's a big bad liar based on what he did. Kind of like Bruce Pearl. Bruce Pearl is soaring along as a Tennessee coach, but you tell that lie to the NCAA investigators, and you're now a horrific liar.
But Jim Tressel know at some point he would have to turn over these emails, and didn't he at some point know that there was a good chance he would get caught?
Well, here's the thing. Tressel being 55 years old or whatever he is, it's real possible he thought if he hit the delete key, they're gone. He doesn't realize that stuff like that's never gone.
Yes.
He probably thought he was going to get away with it by just deleting it. Or maybe he thought, if I turn my computer off someday, I bet they can never get
it. Oh, he thought that if you turn the computer off, they just disappear.
Probably so.
Yes.
But he's probably still trying to figure out what that DVR thing on his TV is. Hey, Jim, that's like a VCR connected to your TV, baby.
All right, now, according to our man Dennis Dodd, the NCAA now says that that Tressel had knowledge that two players, Terrell Pryor and Devere Posey, though the names are redacted in the notice from the NCAA, were selling memorabilia to local tattoo parlor owner Eddie Reif. By the way, is this the most famous tattoo parlor owner in America at this point?
Maybe, but how great is that, that that's who the accessory to this crime or, you know, violation is? It's not just a, it's not a car dealer. It's nothing like that. It's a tattoo parlor. You can think up any nefarious scenario you want to, and while you'll be wrong, I'm sure, there's still the possibility it could be right. You can think, I mean, anything's possible with a tattoo owner.
Now, can I take up for Tressel for one thing here?
I bet I'd take up for him the same thing as you do, but go ahead.
But he's going, according to Todd's article, it said that that means that players competed while ineligible with Tressel's knowledge, a significant violation.
Right.
Now, what makes them with knowledge, essentially they're going on that signed document he made. On September 13th, he signed some document in which he said, I'm unaware of any players that are ineligible. Now, I don't know, Greg. I mean, I see signing a document like that. I understand that that's my white lie part. It's sort of like when you sign up for a hotel on Priceline, and at the end there's like all that contract, and you go, yes, I read this, and you sign, and you didn't really read it. Is that not what this is?
I can see that. There is a difference between lying and being wrong. It's entirely possible that he thought, or more to the point, didn't really consider that what he knew about them, if the NCAA knew, would make them ineligible. It's totally possible. So while some people would say, well, he lied about it, well, he just was mistaken.
Now, I'll even grant you that he was lying. I guess I'm just saying, like, isn't there a difference if the NCAA, for instance, the NCAA called Bruce Pearl and said, Bruce, did you do this? And he said, no. This is a form everybody has to sign, okay? And everybody signs it. He signs it every year, and this time he shouldn't have signed it, but I don't know. That one doesn't bother me as much.
Yeah, no, what he did was not as bad as what Pearl did. Now, that, having said that, it doesn't excuse at all, and I know you don't think I'm excusing him, but it doesn't make it okay, and I don't even think he should keep his job. I think it's a fireable offense, but the difference in my head between Pearl and Tressel is that I knew Bruce Pearl had to be fired. I mean, I knew he had to be fired so much that the day I heard about that, wrote a column saying he's gone. And then about 6 months later, when he still hadn't been fired yet, I wrote an entire column basically saying, what the hell, Tennessee? What the hell?
Yes.
You haven't fired him yet? Whereas with Tressel, I think he ought to be fired, but there's degrees of certainty, and I'm not completely certain he ought to be fired. Pearl was a slam dunk.
So you don't think it's a slam? You don't think it's a slam dunk you get rid of Tressel at this point?
No, but I do think this. I think Pearl had to be fired. Even if Tennessee had won three straight national championships, you've got to fire that guy for lying to NCAA about a violation, and also for encouraging the recruit in question to lie for you. You fire him, I don't care how good you are. Tressel, I think if he's the head coach of Toledo, and Toledo is 7-4, you have to fire him. But I could, him being the coach of Ohio State wins 10 every year, I can see them not firing him. I can see that's why I would never write, what the hell, Ohio State? What the hell? But of course you're firing him. What are you waiting on? No, I can see them not doing it and having a very, very flimsy leg to stand on.
So what's the what happens to Ohio State? I mean, I would think that Ohio State is looking at a serious punishment. But then again, you know, I thought Connecticut would be looking at a serious punishment, and they ended up really not at this point having one. So what do you think?
Well, the difference between those two, and I would expect Ohio State to get worse than what UConn got, and similar really to what Southern Cal got, because Pryor was ineligible, and just like Reggie Bush was ineligible, and they played anyway, so, and Southern Cal got hammered. And there wasn't even the blatant kind of, we know about this, but didn't really know it was against the rule, or didn't know it would make him ineligible, so, you know, Southern Cal couldn't hide behind the fact that Jim Tressel just didn't know what was going on, didn't know it was illegal, or whatever Jim Tressel didn't know. Where UConn, Calhoun didn't lie to anybody, as far as we know. His assistant coaches and director of operations, I think one or two of those guys, misled the NCAA, and then they got pushed out. Now, in the case of Ohio State, the guy that misled his own compliance department, and in turn the NCAA, is the head coach, and he's still there. So I think that's why Ohio State's going to get hit pretty hard, because the guy that they're saying was dishonest is the guy running the show, and he's still there.
Yeah. All right, well, it'll be interesting to see. I do believe that they're going to get hit. I just... You know, you got to go back many years. I guess USC, though, was a very prominent program that the NCAA hit. So you don't believe the Tarkanian, the old Jerry Tarkanian, well, they're going to be so mad at Kentucky, they're going to give Cleveland State another year of probation. Do you think that's still the case?
Ohio State's going to get hit hard. If for no other reason than the NCAA knows that the whole world's watching, and we know you're going to get hit them hard. In this day and age, that whole cliche, and it's true, but that whole cliche about the NCAA was so mad at Kentucky that Cleveland State got hit hard, that was before the internet. That was before the whole world could come together and announce, we're on to you, and if you don't hammer them, we're mad at you. The NCAA can't avoid that now. They know that everybody knows what's going on and will make their life miserable. So they're going to hit Ohio State for no other reason than to shut everybody up. But one thing that just happened today, and it doesn't mean anything officially, but it certainly bodes really badly for Ohio State, is that Kirk Herbstreit, apparently, and I didn't hear this, but I saw an ESPN employee tweeted this a few minutes ago, that Herbstreit was on ESPN today and said he doesn't see how Ohio State can continue with Jim Tressel as their head coach.
Oh, wow. That's a pretty big comment.
When you've lost Kirk Herbstreit, you've lost the press conference.
Well, I always tell this Kirk Herbstreit story, so I might as well tell it to a national audience. Herbstreit, do you know Keeneland in Lexington, Kentucky? Have you ever been?
I don't like ponies. I like to pet ponies. I don't like to race ponies, but anyway, I know about it.
Keeneland is like everybody knows Churchill Downs is the horse track, the main horse track in America, but Keeneland is like nice, a nice version of. So Keeneland would be the new Cowboys Stadium, whereas, you know, Churchill Downs, the Meadowlands or something. You know what I mean? Like it's a different kind of place. So Keeneland's very sort of posh and, you know, et cetera. And Herbstreit comes every year. And one year, a guy for my other gig, the Kentucky Sports Radio, Drew Franklin, was his waiter. Have I told you this story, Greg, before?
No, I've never heard about this.
He was his waiter at Keeneland because Drew used to wait at Keeneland. And so he was his waiter. And Herbstreit comes over and orders a Manhattan. Now, have you ever had a Manhattan?
No.
Brian, the intern, you ever had a Manhattan?
No, I haven't.
It has like a lot of alcohol in it. It's got like three or four different liqueurs all together. And it's considered, Greg, to be a very strong drink.
Okay.
So he takes the Manhattan, Drew makes it, and then he looks at Drew and he goes, hey, man, this is a little strong. You got something that's not quite as strong. Now, you might make fun of Herbstreit for that, but hey, not everybody can drink a Manhattan just raw, all right? So what does he order? He orders a vodka and cranberry. Now, that's pretty weak, all right? It's pretty weak, but again, the man's having fun. Let him do what he wants, Greg Doyle.
Well, you're describing like the little bear, oh, this porch's too hot, and the big bear says, no, it's too cold, and the little bear says it's just right. Someone needed to get Kirk Herbstreit his middle bear drink, I'm guessing would have been rum and Coke.
But he ends up with the vodka and cranberry. He drinks two, Drew said, in like 5 minutes. Okay. Comes over, asks for another one, drinks it quickly, then looks at Drew and goes, dude, I'm just crushing these. Which has become
like a true 19-year-old.
Exactly, which has become the sort of, for our little group here, it's become our catchphrase for when somebody brags about something that's not really worth bragging about. Dude, I'm just crushing these. So since I heard that story, I challenge you, Greg, to look at Kirk Herbstreit the same. When you see him on TV and he's acting all big and bad, just think of him crushing vodka and cranberries.
Well, you know, I've never looked at him and thought anything other than, you know, he's a little fancy pants. I mean, he's a very pretty guy, and you don't think of a very pretty guy, or of people like me who say other people are pretty guys, you don't think of us as incredibly tough human beings. And so I never was going to think that Kirk Herbstreit, with those pretty blue eyes, was ever a tough guy. So had you told me he ordered three Shirley Temples, I said, yeah, I see that.
I just, with Herbstreit, I always have the same question. How does that guy stay married when he goes to a different college campus every weekend looking the way he does?
Yeah, it's true. I mean, I love Jay Billis for his brain. I think that guy's brilliant and funny and all that. But Kirk Herbstreit is physically and I can't believe I'm saying this.
I can't believe you're going to say it either. But go ahead.
Say this. But Kirk Herbstreit's looks are as impressive on a superficial scale as Jay Billis' brain is. And can we please talk about?
By the way, that's getting tweeted out later. That's getting tweeted out a little bit later today. But yes, Herbstreit, I always wonder, how's that guy? That guy should have, if he had known he was going to do College Game Day, he should have stayed single. That's all I'm saying.
Well,
now,
okay, but what's more shocking, him being married, and I, you know, you go, Kirk, I'm proud of you for being married, or Tim Tebow remaining a virgin.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me, because even no matter how good you all are at sports, lame is lame, and I like Tebow, but he's clearly lame. And so he could, not to get it wrong, he could get any one. I mean, he could get a ton of women. I certainly believe that. But like, I think it, you know, he can hold the lame card and be all right.
Yeah, but lame is, I get you on the lame thing, but temptation is a mighty powerful thing. It's like AC Green. You know, that guy was tempted by some of the best, and I don't care how lame you are, how much you've bought into whatever it is you bought into. I know the male urge. Every now and then I have one to not give in. I've never had the male urge with the kind of quality I'm guessing that those guys have had.
Yes, you have not.
Right, exactly. And I'm still waxing poetic about Kirk Herbstreit's
yeah.
books.
Well, let's switch topics. The NFL draft. Of course, NFL labor situation's going on, and I don't care about it, even though I should, because it's kind of legal in nature. I don't really care, because I know what's going on, but it's boring. And ultimately, I don't believe they'll miss any time, because there's too much money at stake. But the NFL draft, I do think, Greg, has suffered, because I don't remember an NFL draft with sort of less buzz than this one. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, because usually the month or two or three leading up to the draft, every ounce of football coverage and discussion, whether it's written by a writer or spoken on TV or whatever, is devoted to the draft and devoted to this player or that player, whereas this year it's completely broken in half, at least, by talk about the strike and the lockout. So there's a reason for that. I've actually got a story going up soon, maybe tomorrow, urging people, and you know, it's fruitless, but urging people, don't watch the draft, boycott the draft, and follow me on this. Imagine if, let's pretend for a moment that I was Bill Simmons and could orchestrate all of my minions in Boston to do their, gosh, I can't stand those people, to do their cheers.
And your hatred of Bill Simmons is still my favorite quality of yours.
Let's make it clear. I'm very envious, okay? I admit that. But let's make all these idiots in Boston chant, because I told them to, because I'm the puppet master. Well, imagine if I had that.
Yeah, but that got overrated, by the way. You understand, there were like 30 people chanting at those games.
Really? Because to hear Bill Simmons' people?
Well, of course, Bill Simmons is going to say, hey, this was crazy. But, I mean, again, it was not nearly as big as they acted like.
Good. I'm not nearly as envious as I thought I was. Well, then maybe I can have that kind of impact here. Because my point is, imagine if everybody agreed with me, and if they ever thought about this for a second, they would agree with me. If we all boycotted the draft and their overnight TV ratings were like 0.7, just something embarrassing, I think that would get the NFL's attention. I guarantee you on Monday they would say, wait a minute, the NFL draft is a national holiday in this country. The whole world watches it, and this country watches it almost like it's a bowl game or better than the bowl game, and they're not watching because they're so mad at us. We better get this stuff straightened out now, or they might take. Are they going to ignore our games in September? So
yeah, but of course, you're making a lot of assumptions. One would be that that would happen, and one of the things I've learned in sports is that the games trump everything else. Okay, so I go back to the hockey strike, the basketball strike, the baseball strike. Everybody says the fans punish the leagues. I don't believe any of that. The games just stunk. And when the games are good, they come back. People will watch the draft or not watch the draft based on what they think about the draft. People do not make political statements during sports based on their viewing.
Well, given that this thing has become so political, it's not quite the right word, but you know, it's economic and all that, but given the fact that this draft and this sport has become so non-athletic, and we're talking about dollars and cents and labor and this and that, all these boring topics that even you as a lawyer don't want to deal with, and I don't want to think about them at all, I think it would serve a purpose for all of us to say, you know what, the hell with you, NFL. We're not going to watch your stupid little draft, and we're not going to watch Nick Fairley fall, even though he's the best player in this draft. We're not going to watch him fall to 17 because somebody decided they don't like Auburn. We're not going to watch. So there.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's a great idea. It's not going to happen. Now, the only thing I really care about in the draft, I want to see where my man Randall Cobb goes, because I think he's going to be a great player. But nationally, I think really the only thing anybody could care about is Cam Newton, right?
Yeah, he is fascinating, and yeah, he's just like last year. The only thing people really cared about, well, one of the only things is how far does Tebow fall? Where does he get drafted? Because he was such a unique college player, it was really fascinating to see what's going to happen to him in the NFL. And Cam Newton's the same way, although he's not quite as unique as Tebow. I think Newton's a much better pro prospect than Tebow was, but still, he's got all this weird baggage and even some phantom baggage that doesn't really exist is holding him back, and we'll see what happens.
Did you like the story of you and I haven't talked about the guy who poisoned the trees down there at Alabama. Did you hear his radio interview with Feinbaum?
Now, was this, I heard about it, was this a second interview or was this the original one from months ago?
No. He did a second interview. Okay, so for people who don't know this story, because it's a big story in the South, may not be a big story elsewhere. You got this Auburn, Alabama, they hate each other. You got this crazy Alabama fan who goes, and there's this old tree, like it's like this big tree. It's been there 130 years or something at Auburn. Do you know how old that tree is, BTI?
I don't know, but it's a couple trees. Toomer's Corner.
All right. So, and they've got a couple. See how old they are, if you can find out how old they are. But they got these trees, and he went and he poisoned the earth. Okay, and the trees died. And then basically, and so at some point, Greg, they may fall down, which is amazing to me, though, they can't save them, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you would think in 2011 you could save those trees, correct?
This is the first time I've even thought about that, so I can't tell you what I would have thought.
Okay, well, I would have thought they could have
saved it. It might take a while, but you kill it, it's dead.
I would have thought they could have saved it somehow. You know, give it some Tylenol or something. So anyway, he then gets charged with a crime. Which, Greg, in and of itself, getting charged with a crime for poisoning a tree, I think is pretty amazing to begin with, right?
Wait, the alternative to that, not getting charged with a crime, is unacceptable. I mean, you kill something that old, especially in this day as we're all getting greener, but I think...
But if I come kill your tree in your yard, am I going to get charged? No.
No, because they don't charge dead people.
So you're going to... Nice. I didn't realize you cared for your trees that much.
My
anyway,
property value is everything. You start killing trees in my yard, you're going down.
All right. Well, anyway, he kills the tree. Then he gets charged. And on his way, in his first court appearance, on his way out of the courthouse, he gets attacked by an Auburn fan seeking vengeance. And he ends up having to go to the hospital. All right. So after that, he goes on Feinbaum's show last week, Greg, and he gives this crazy interview where he basically admits to doing it, talks about what happened, et cetera, and then he ends the interview with, I feel bad about this. You know, I guess I shouldn't have done it, but I do have to say, roll damn tide. And he ends it with that, and now the Auburn fans are furious. I mean, what do you make of that whole story?
Well, the whole thing is ridiculous, but look, what fans do... I get emails all the time from fans, mad, you know, if I've ripped this school or that school, let's say I've ripped NC State, and I'll get an interview, I'll get an email from fans, and they conclude it by yelling or writing, you know, all capitals, go Wolfpack, as if I told him, I wrote go Wolfpack, or go Heels, go Trojans, go Wild, go whoever, go Auburn, go whatever it is, roll damn tide. It's this whole idea that I'm going to get the last word by saying go for my favorite team, and that'll show the world. You're talking about small-minded people. Anybody who's going to kill a tree is tiny of the brain. I mean, we're talking stegosaurus brain.
Stegosaurus. Very nice. I like that.
Large body, small brain.
BTI, you say how old?
130 years
old. 130-year-old tree. So you're cool. You're fine with us using our resources, our government resources, to go after this.
Well, it doesn't sound like it was very hard to do. And now, But yeah, I'm fine. The guy went on Feinbaum earlier. That's why I asked you which interview was it with Feinbaum, because he went on. The reason we even know who he is he went on Feinbaum anonymously and bragged about. He said, "Yeah, I killed him. I poured such and such on those trees, and they'll be dead soon enough." And that got people out there to test the trees, and sure enough, they found out, wow, they had been poisoned, and they traced the phone call or whatever and arrested the guy. So he, again, stegosaurus brain. So the guy is clearly mentally, you know, challenged, or if not completely stupid. But yeah, a guy like that, put him in jail. Put him under the jail. What do I care?
You seem very upset about it. Now, are you watching the NBA playoffs? I ask you this every so often, and generally you seem to sort of not particularly care. Has that changed at all?
Now, hold on. There is one sport, and only one sport, that you know for a fact I'm watching when it's on. What's that one sport?
Football.
No, the UFC, dadgummit.
Oh, okay. Well, UFC, that's going to be banned in 5 years, so let's at least stay with basketball.
Well, you could move to New York, where the last state to real, you know, the Flat Earth Society still lives in New York, and they're not going to sanction the UFC or MMA at all. So go up there with all those heathens. But the rest of the world, we understand what's coming. It's a tsunami. And
Okay, but back to the NBA. I don't know what. Listen, if we want to do a UFC podcast, we'll get the 8 meatheads and juicers to listen. Focus with me on sports people care about.
Oh, well, okay, but just you talk about meatheads and juicers. I'm thinking now you're tapping into Simmons' audience.
Nice. Again, NBA playoffs.
Oh. No, I'm not watching because the problem is if I turn the TV on, I might see LeBron James, and that might just make me sick. So
see,
no, I'm not watching him yet.
See, that's exactly what I wanted to get to. Did you see the play with Spencer Hawes on Sunday?
I saw the highlight of that, yes, and it looked like a hard foul that happens in the playoffs, but LeBron being LeBron. Wait a minute. I'm LeBron, and you're just Spencer, whoever you are. You can't foul me like that.
That's exactly what it looked like to me, and it actually infuriated me, and I'm predisposed to try to like LeBron.
Why?
In part because, well, I know his best friend from high school is an assistant. He's a graduate assistant here at UK, and I really like him. Good guy. All right, his name's Brandon Weems. Good kid. And he always gets on me. He's like, why do you say bad things about LeBron? LeBron's a good guy, blah, 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 blah. So I want to like him. But I saw that, Greg, and it infuriated me. He goes up for a dunk. He gets fouled. It's a normal foul. And what happens? He comes out and whines exactly like he was entitled to go to the rim without getting hit.
Right. Well, because he has been for so long. I mean, he's been coddled by everybody, you know, starting with his mom and the Cavaliers and everybody at Akron, the high school he went to. So no one's ever told him no. Actually, this year the Heat have been telling him no. And that's why, if you remember, LeBron's people leaked it to somebody that they were not happy with the head coach, and you know, he might need to get fired at some point, because Spoelstra and the Heat, for the first time anyone's ever done this, were standing up to LeBron the way you're going to play, the way you're going to whatever. Who knows what he wanted to do behind the scenes with his entourage, but he's getting a couple things he didn't think could happen to him, which is reality, which is good. I'll never like him, never. Now, if he pulls one of those, because he won't even come out and say, you know what, that was a mistake. The decision, that was a mistake. Shouldn't have done it. My bad. He won't even admit that. I mean,
what if he does, though? Would that change it for you if he this offseason goes, you know what, I shouldn't have done that?
It would go a long way, because for me, it's very hard to be upset with people when they acknowledge the one thing I'm upset about. If I'm mad at you about whatever it is you've done, and you come out and say, shouldn't have done that, okay, I can move on now. Now I'm okay. But specifically in this case, for LeBron to keep acting like, it was, you know, played the race card, and the race had something to do with the fact that people didn't like that. You know, when LeBron says something like that, me as a white guy, I'm thinking, wait a minute, did you just say what I think you said about me? Not, you don't know who I am, but are you saying basically all of us that didn't like that, we're racist? Really? Now I dislike you even more.
Well, I'm glad you do. I can see it. I see it gets you riled up. I want to talk just a minute about each of these series. First of all, Heat 76ers, as we tape this, it is 3-1 Heat. The Heat are going to win, but in watching them, any reason you think they are vulnerable going forward? They are something crazy, like 1-19 in games decided in the last 10 seconds.
Yeah, I've had the TV on a few times for a few possessions, so I saw a stat the other day. I think it was that game that said in the last 2 minutes the Heat are shooting 8% or something. They're just the anti-clutch team.
Yeah, and then LeBron is the worst. I mean, he misses every clutch shot.
Right, including he missed one late in that game I saw. But there's nothing about that series that's going to show anything about the vulnerability of the Heat, because they're vulnerable against teams that have really good and big men. And Elton Brand's a nice big man, but he's an undersized power forward, and he plays center some because Spencer Hawes can't do it very much. So that's not the kind of team that's going to expose them. The kind of team that will expose the Heat is, for example, the Bulls with Boozer and Noah, or the Celtics with Garnett and whoever else they put down there.
Well, the Celtics just swept the Knicks. First of all, D'Antoni, would you keep him there? He sometimes looks to be coaching half paying attention.
Yeah, I think you have to keep him there. I mean, they just remade the team by bringing Carmelo there. D'Antoni was a huge coup of a hire when they got him, and now you finally have given that attack dog some teeth. I don't see the upside. I mean, who are you going to do? Who are they going to get better than Mike D'Antoni?
What about John Calipari?
Now, look, I'm a Cal guy. But yes. There is nothing about Calipari's background that says he's a better NBA coach than Mike D'Antoni.
No, I agree with that.
Yeah, no, I would not do that. No.
Okay. The Bulls and the Pacers, Derrick Rose tweaked his ankle a little bit in one of theirs. I mean, the Bulls, I watch them sometimes and I wonder, how are they the number one overall seed? I mean, I Noah's a nice player. Boozer's okay. Rose is transcendently good. But they're starting my man Keith Bogans. And they got guys like Lawal Ding. I mean, I don't know. I don't understand really how they are as good as they are.
I think they're as good as they are because nobody's any good, really. This NBA season looks more and more, especially as I pay attention to the playoffs a little bit, and mainly by reading about it, and even the series that are blowouts are 4-0, 3-1. All the games are close. Nobody can put anybody away. Even the ones versus eights, the eights are not either winning or coming close to winning against the ones. It's like March Madness all over again. We got a whole bunch of Butlers out there, which means you're pretty good. But you're not great. I mean, look at UConn. UConn has got to be. People were saying if Butler wins the national championship, is that the worst national champion in 20 years? Maybe so, but UConn winning is the worst national champion I've seen in 20 years.
Well, they're the worst national champion since 97 Arizona, I would think. And 97 Arizona was seeded lower than UConn. They had two. We now look back and go, they had Miles Simon, but nobody. What is Miles Simon? I mean, you wouldn't know who he was if it wasn't for the turn. And Bibby, but they have Kimball Walker
and Dickerson. No, they had three really, really high level guards, and they weren't awful down low. Did that team have Lauren Woods?
I don't think so. Lauren Woods comes a little bit later. He's more the Juan Dixon era of college basketball.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. Yeah, that's a good call. It's possible that Arizona-UConn would play a really bad game.
Awful game. But in general, yes. I mean, it's one of the worst champions. But you have written that you actually think next year could be a great year in college basketball with at least three great teams in Carolina, Kentucky, and Duke.
Yeah, because all these guys are back, and it doesn't mean that all these bad teams that I'm saying were not great will be great next year just because they're all back, but they're all back, and then they're adding to it with really good recruits. This freshman class, the one coming in, will be the kind of class that puts players in the pros at the lottery level, and not just because someone has to go because they're that good. The freshman class that we have right now is not that good. The freshman class next year, dynamite. Carolina's got a bunch of them. Of course, Kentucky has a bunch of them.
And Duke's got a bunch of them now, and they just got another one. Alex Murphy, that's the kid who from Florida, or the kid at Florida who broke in and then had that great police tape, Eric Murphy. It's his brother, Alex, is coming in a year early. So Duke now, I mean, really, Kentucky, Duke, and North Carolina, there could be three great teams next year.
Duke is untouchable, and I don't mean that in a good way, but it's really amazing how Duke is the program that it was Jay Williams that started it, and I think Dunleavy may have done it too, Boozer. Those guys all graduated or came close. No, Jay Williams did. Graduated, and he's a smart guy, but still graduated in 3 years. And that's kind of how they were attracting players. Hey, you can come to Duke and you can leave early like all the cool kids are doing now, go to the pros early, but you can also get your degree in 3 years. You can have it all at Duke. I thought Duke was Princeton of the South or Harvard of the South.
Yeah, I find that to be, as someone who owns a Duke diploma, I find that to be totally bogus.
Yeah, no one's graduating from Harvard in 3 years.
And no one's graduating from Duke in 3 years that's not playing basketball. So you're going to tell me that somehow these guys are able to do while also playing basketball what nobody else at Duke can do? I don't buy it. I don't buy it at all.
And in addition to that, they've got all these guys they're reclassifying. I forget what the kid's name is, but he's a guard and he's a sophomore. But he reclassified a couple years ago.
Andre Dawkins.
Dawkins, right. He was a high school junior. Duke needed him, so what the heck? I'll graduate early. Everybody's doing it, and I'll go to Duke. And now they've got this kid, Mitt, you're saying the younger brother of the Florida kid, Murphy, was supposed to be a junior, but what the heck? I'll graduate early. I mean, I thought Duke was a hard school to get into. Now we're letting in high school juniors?
Yeah, I mean, I'm totally with you on that, and yet no one ever seems to mention it because they just assume. A perfect example is this one-and-done stuff. Your man, your best friend, ESPN 40, wrote an article in which he essentially said that Pat 40 said that Josh Selby is an example of why the one-and-done rule stinks. He didn't want to go to college, blah, blah, blah. Now, he also fails to notice that it's not college basketball that put that rule in. It's the NBA. But what about Kyrie Irving? Kyrie Irving played 10 games in college, and most people believe, I don't know for certain, but most people believe he's kind of checked out anyway of Duke. Why don't we talk about Kyrie Irving as an example of anything? Is it just because he chose to go to a good school and leave after a year?
Yeah, there's a, it's kind of like the car wash. Same thing has happened over the years with the New England Patriots, and it's wearing away now, but when the Patriots were going to the Super Bowl every year and winning it most of the time, they could have a guy like Corey Dillon would go up there, and just, you know, a bad guy, universally considered a bad guy. He goes to New England, not a peep is heard, and he kind of gets, he remakes his image a little bit just because he's playing for Belichick. And the same thing happens at Duke. And Irving's not a bad guy or anything.
No, I have no reason to think he is.
But yeah, but they've got guys now. Theoretically, if we can combine a guy like Dawkins or this Murphy kid with what Jay Williams did, you're talking about guys that could spend 6 years total and still get degrees in high school and college because they all went to Duke. And Duke is not, it's not like Duke's easy, you know, or supposed to be easy. Apparently it is, but and you would know, I guess. But I mean, it's just, it's really, Duke is untouchable, and I don't mean that in a good way.
All right, back to where we were going with the NBA. I watched the Lakers last night with the New Orleans Hornets. They look old to me, but as soon as you, I heard a stat that last year when they won the championship, over the course of the playoffs, they were only 16-12. So they won the playoffs going 16-12. Will this team do the same thing, go 16-12 and win the title, or are they destined to kind of fail?
I've already come out and said, so I can't come out and say anything different, that this is a bad year for the NBA. There's no great team. There's not one.
See, I disagree with you. It's a bad year. I find the playoffs more interesting this year than in any year since Jordan.
Well, I would like to see a team, a really good team, act like it's really good and blow someone out and just be transcendent. You know, I'd like to see greatness.
Yeah, but would you really like that? Because then the playoffs are boring. I mean, unlike the NCAA tournament, where you only have to watch great teams play a little bit, a dominant team in a playoff series, they still have to play four games, and it's awful to watch.
Well, but I'm not talking about I want every series to have a dominant team. Just one. You know, just one dominant team. All the other series, there's what, eight first-round series total? Seven of them can be really interesting, and we can have that one great team that we know, okay, you're rolling. But there's not that one great team. And I say that only to say that I'm not about to say, oh, the Lakers can't win. You know, look, it's like UConn-Butler. Someone had to win that game.
Yes.
Someone had to. Someone has to win the NBA this year. Greatness sometimes is earned, and sometimes greatness is thrust upon you. Whoever wins the NBA Finals this year, greatness will be thrust upon them, but they're not going to be great.
Well, I disagree with you a little bit, though, about this not being. I mean, I think you've got, for the first time in recent memory, you've got 5 to 6 really good teams. Okay, so you've got the Lakers, the Thunder, the Spurs, and then in the East, the Bulls, the Celtics, and the Heat. Those are 6 teams, any of which can win the title. When has that happened?
Well, any of which can win the title, in part because you look around and you don't see anybody that you know is going to knock them off. I just don't think that we have 6 great teams. I think we have 6 pretty good teams, and because there's not a great team, do you know, well, look, no one's getting by the Heat. Because, no, they all have just enormous holes. Some of them, their hole is age. Some is, like in the Heat's case, their hole is Chris Bosh is their tough guy. They all have a hole. The Lakers are really, they've got to be the most infuriating team out there. It's got to be hard to be a Laker fan because you got Kobe, can't decide if he wants to be a ball hog, or when he's called a ball hog, he pouts and refuses to shoot. And people say he's a great team player, and when he wants to, he is a great team player. But anybody who's going to say to himself, and obviously play this way, I'm the best player on this court, everybody knows I'm the best player on the court, but because my teammates think I shoot too much, I'm going to show them I'm not shooting for a half. Let's see how far these stiffs can go without me scoring. That's what he does every year, a couple times a year in the playoffs. I've seen it happen several times in person. He's already done it this year. I mean, he's just a bad guy. I mean, that's not, a good guy doesn't behave that way. But then you got Pau Gasol is all of a sudden the second best of the two Gasol brothers, which is shocking. But
yeah, what do you think about the Memphis Grizzlies down there? I mean, they've got, you know, OJ Mayo, Gasol, all these random guys. They could beat the Spurs because they're younger, they're more aggressive. What do you like them?
I'm intrigued by him, and I'm intrigued by him because they're not one of the anointed few that were on TV every night this year. I don't watch a lot of NBA, For a lot of reasons. One is I don't like the NBA very much, but two, I'm not inclined to watch it when it's every time I turn on TNT or ESPN, it's always got the game involves the Heat, Lakers, Celtics, Bulls, Orlando Magic. You know, there's like five or six teams and whoever they play, and that's it. So I never saw the Grizzlies, and so I was blown away because I'm reading box scores now that O.J. Mayo doesn't even start for them.
No, he doesn't, and actually Rudy Gay, who may be their best player, is not even, he's hurt. So I mean they've really done an amazing job, all things considered.
And Zach Randolph is their best player now, and I thought it was really weird timing. There are some guys that can handle prosperity. You know, some guys can handle getting what Zach Randolph got. He got a huge contract extension, like between games or something. It might even been between quarters of a game against the Lakers.
It was really between quarters.
It was weird timing because he's the kind of guy that you can see him saying, you know what, I just got paid. I'm mailing it in now. I mean, that's the kind of guy Zach Randolph has always been. We'll see if it affects him negatively. It hasn't so far, but I would have rather kept, you know, some guys you want to keep hungry. He's got, looks like, you don't keep him hungry, he's going to weigh 350 overnight.
I think that's exactly right. Now, you seemed interested in this story that came out today about the Iowa player. He's 26 years old. He's only played basketball for two organized years, but he's going to go to Iowa next year. He has a pretty big criminal record. In fact, he's an ex-felon. He was charged with four felonies during his teen years. In December of 2003, the then 18-year-old Anthony Hubbard was charged with attempted robbery, burglary, and battery while invading a man's house. Hubbard got away, but then turned himself in, and he spent 4 years behind bars. He was three times denied parole. And now he's going to play at the age of 26, play college basketball. Are you, as my old pastor when I was a little kid would say, are you for it or are you again it?
On the surface, I was totally again it. When I read it, I thought, come on, Iowa, don't do that. But then I read a little bit about it. It's kind of like that whole Aaron Rodgers story. If you remember, look at Aaron Rodgers. He walked right by a cancer patient. He's a bad guy. And I can't believe I just compared a felon to Aaron Rodgers, but anyway, there was more to that whole walking by a cancer patient story. There's more to this, and there's not more in the sense of he's innocent. No, he's guilty. It looks like he clearly did it, and went to prison for it. But he doesn't strike me, and all I know about him is what I've read in the last couple hours, and I'm seeing some quotes.
So what you're saying is you're very this is an informed opinion we're going to get here.
It's the most informed opinion you're going to hear on this podcast.
Okay.
And my informed opinion is that he's this kid's remorseful, but sweet about it. I mean, like nice about it. He's not, doesn't have a chip on his shoulder. I mean, you can just tell from, I mean, some people when they talk, you're like, okay, this guy gets it. I mean, he gets it. Well, he screwed up and he's grateful to have the chance and he gets it. And then some guys, you know, this guy, he doesn't really get it, does he? This kid gets it. And the people around him say he gets it. And it has been 8 years. And I even like the fact, I hate what he was accused of, and I hate the fact that apparently he did it. But I like the fact that after a couple of days on the lam, he turned himself in, pleaded guilty, you know, took his punishment, took his medicine, and now is just grateful to have this chance. And what's really interesting about him is, aside from the off the court stuff, is the guy never played in high school, never played because he had issues, never played, goes to JUCO. Just because he was a natural guy that could play on the playgrounds, I guess, put up 20 and 10. He's a 6'5 shooting guard, 20 and 10, but he shot 64% from the floor. Even if that's inflated, and I'm sure it is a little bit, that's pretty good.
That is pretty amazing. Now, I want to we'll finish up this podcast by talking a little bit. I want to get your opinion on what I think is maybe one of the funnier stories in college basketball, the Fiesta Frolic. Are you familiar with the Fiesta Frolic?
Well, yeah, I mean, it sounds like there was a junket.
Yes, the Fiesta Bowl flew out a ton of people to come out when they had the national championship game. And, of course, that's what's gotten them in trouble, a lot of stuff. But we found out today there are 11 people on the subcommittee that will decide whether or not the Fiesta Bowl gets to stay as part of the BCS and whether or not the Fiesta Bowl's various transgressions are too much to sort of take away their plum spot in the BCS. And we now found out that 9 of the 11 people on that board were part of the Fiesta Frolic. Don't you love that?
Well, I do love it, but it's par for the course. Don't we have in the NBA, as the Sacramento Kings are trying to leave Sacramento maybe and get moved to L.A., we've got relocation committee chaired by the guy that owns the Oklahoma City Thunder, who once upon a time were Seattle until he bought them and moved them. So what kind of a shot does Sacramento have when the guy chairing the relocation committee of the NBA has already personally moved his own team? So that team's as good as gone, you'd think. So then you've got junket takers judging the junketeers. It's kind of like Iowa's Rabdo deal, where they had Iowa investigated Iowa and decided that Iowa did nothing wrong despite the fact that Iowa put 13 kids in the hospital. Well, Iowa investigated Iowa. What do you expect Iowa's going to say? So the circular logic is kind of mind-numbing.
One of the guys on the that went on the junket was Sunbelt Commissioner Wright Walters, and I don't know much about him, but I like this quote.
Well, I hate his name, by the way.
Yeah, that's a terrible name.
More Southern good old boy, Wright Walters.
My name is Wright Walters, and I run the Sunbelt Conference. And so anyway, he said he apparently took a bunch of golf, et cetera, and he goes, quote, accepting a round of golf and meals over 3 days is not illegal, and it certainly fits into the range of what I would call to be normal corporate hospitality.
Look, I do want to come out and say this. I mean, it's easy right now to look at what's going on, look at the fact that Fiesta Bowl has already fired somebody, and you can, I mean, look, I can put my finger in the air and gauge which way the wind's blowing. I realize what the right thing to say is right here, but at the same, and I don't think having junket acceptors judge the junketeers is very smart.
Yes.
But I don't see a major problem with Wright Walters and his people accepting a golf trip. I just, you know, that's what they do. It's not, they're not.
But they, but then they have to be the ones to make the, yes, you, what do you mean you don't think it's a big deal? Of course it's a big deal. When you are going to be the person making the judgment, you can't take gifts from one of the parties.
No, that's what I'm saying. No. I am saying that having junket takers now judge the people who gave away the junkets is ridiculous. But going another step forward, in general, I don't see, like, Wright Walters, people are making a big deal that guys like Wright Walters accepted this trip and played free golf. Big deal. That is corporate hospitality. That is.
But it's not corporate hospitality if you then, he went on to say, so this doesn't stop me from judging them because it's normal corporate hospitality. I mean, that, of course it's not. You cannot, as a judge, Greg, like, if you were going to, are you going to sue somebody ever? Let's say you sue, you know, me.
If,
all right.
If you kill a tree in my yard, assuming you're not dead, I'm suing you.
All right. So you sue me. The judge that's deciding our case, you can't take him to play golf before the decision.
I can't.
No, you cannot.
I got to beat you in a court of law. You're a lawyer. I'm just a redneck from Mississippi.
I think you're in trouble. I think that's exactly right. Well, Greg, thank you very much. As usual, when we come here next time, we're going to actually, I'm going to have created, now you got to get excited about this, I'm going to be creating a bracket. We're going to do this on our Thursday podcast, a 16-person bracket that we will go through on some topic, all right? And it'll change every time. And my next one is going to be, in honor of the NFL draft, your biggest NFL draft bus, all right? And we're going to have a little tournament, so you be thinking about who would be on your list.
So in other words, you're telling me I got to do research.
No. You don't have to do anything. I'll take care.
Off the top of my head, I know of 16 busts.
No. I will create the tournament. You just have to help me vote on who wins.
Oh, Ryan Leaf wins.
Okay. Thank you for ruining the entire system. By the way, BTI, just so you know, so people know, in doing this podcast, one of the things Greg said to me was like, you understand, I'm not going to do anything to prepare. And he wanted to make that clear, BTI.
I think that has been made clear.
Has it been made clear?
Look, if I were a baseball player, I'd tell you, look, I roll out of bed and hit 340, okay?
But you could hit 380, but you're not willing to put in the work to do that.
I got a round of golf to play later with the judge. I don't have time to hit 380.
You got Wright Walters to play golf. Greg, as always, thank you very much.
All right, thank you, Matt. Thanks to BTI.
We'll see you next time.